Let's go.
Okay, welcome to Three Out of Three Falls, a wrestling podcast where your two hosts discuss three matches, one chosen by each of us and one chosen by our random match generator. My name is Joe.
Hey, my name's Jason.
And one thing I want to get off of my chest really quick here is apologies for the skip week. I came down with the flu. We had some delays in when we could record, and then I started barfing everywhere. So,
But now we're back and we are ready to go.
and go to the go to our Tumblr, our blog, tootf, tootf dot tumblr.com. You can see the matches that we're about to discuss, and you could watch them before you hear us talk about them. So we're gonna start with my match this time.
We're going to start with your match.
Okay, my pick this week was Farouk versus Bart Gunn on Raw 194, January 20, 1997. That's
All right.
not the random match generator pick.
No, it's not.
That
All
is
right.
Joe's pick.
That is Joe's fucking pick. I have so many questions for you, Joe.
Bring it on. My notes for this, by the way, are so minuscule. I wrote down, like, I don't know, it's like 10 lines or something.
Oh shit.
But
All
I
right.
still
So
have tons to say.
I feel like this is a throwback pick from the last episode that we picked, where we talked about Mankind and The Rock fighting each other, and you were talking about how The Rock is such a likable character, except when he's fighting Farouk. And we briefly got into the fact that, you are a huge fan of Farouk. So, Joe, why do you like Farouk so much?
Man, so Farouk was my favorite wrestler at this period of time. Pretty much, I came back to watching wrestling, I want to say like 95, 96, WWE, F. And then, when did the NWO debut? 96?
96, June of 96. That goes back
Yeah.
to the throat spiking
Yeah.
episode that we had.
So we were talking about or my we were starting to watch WWF a little more as they came out of the new era. And then we started watching WCW with NWO when Hall and Nash went over. And for some reason, for this, there were definitely other wrestlers that I really like. And on the WCW side, pretty quickly, Chris Jericho became my favorite. And I had other guys I had shirts of, Raven, stuff like that.
You were a big Raven fan?
Yeah, I really liked Raven. We both, my brother and I, loved the Madness, Macho Man as the Madness.
But Macho Madness was a different level of Macho
He's
Man than you had experienced previously.
Oh yeah, he
His
went
fall.
insane. That was back at the time. But so my favorite wrestler on WWE was Farouk Asad. And so much so that so in this is early Nation we're watching. He comes out with
This is extremely early Nation. This is like
no
embryonic
other wrestlers.
Virginia.
He's got JC
What?
Ice and Wolfie D, who
Who
are
are
two.
PG-13? Who are technically wrestlers, just not very good wrestlers.
They're white rappers, so I hated them, even though I know the first verse of their Nation rap by heart.
But at that time, they were USWA, like 14-time tag team champions.
Yeah, so I had no clue. I just thought that they were nameless white rappers, and I was disgusted by them, but still
Sure.
loved Farouk. And sorry, as the Nation progressed,
Also, Crush was a
oh,
part of
Crush
that.
was there. Yeah. Actually, Crush looked cool when he was out there this time. I didn't like him. I didn't like Crush. I really didn't like anyone else in the Nation until later. I guess I ended up liking the Godfather. I liked D-Lo when he was not in the Nation. I actually like some Savio Vega when he's not in the Nation. I didn't like anyone else in the Nation when they were in the Nation. I
Except
was at
for
a house show at I think Kobo, or no, Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, and the Nation came out, and I ran up to the aisle that they came out because we were down like a little ways from the aisle, and I
Yeah.
ran to the aisle, and the Nation filed out, and I pointed at each member of the Nation and yelled, "You suck! You suck! You suck! You suck!" One by one as they came out, and then Farouk came out, and I raised my fist and yelled, "Farouk is the man!" And I was like a chubby, like 8th grade white kid with a shaved head. It was terrible. But
Oh,
I
shit.
really, really thought Farouk was the man. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I understood the general idea of the gimmick.
Yeah.
I feel like there might have been, I wasn't a complete dummy. There might have been some element to it where it was like the audacity of the gimmick plus just how cool and powerful Farouk looked and was and yelled at
Sure.
people, like that combined. But like you'll see, you saw in this match that the Dominator he does in this match is, I
Yeah.
actually never really loved the Dominator, but that one is brutal. And he just kind of like is a big bruiser dude who beats the crap out of guys. And I guess I probably couldn't believe that they were running that gimmick.
Oh man.
Just
Well,
a mix
it's
of things. He was the coolest, and when Rocky chased him out of the Nation, it really bummed me out. I actually liked the Acolytes pre-APA because Farouk was there.
Oh
And
man.
then the APA I loved, and I should have kept watching wrestling into the early 2000s because apparently Farouk had a, you know, a good run on SmackDown or something. But sorry, I've been talking too long.
Farouk originally came in as kind of like
A gladiator, yeah.
a gladiator character who was managed by Sonny, which didn't necessarily make sense. So they took Ron Simmons off of TV for like a month or two, and then brought him back with Clarence Mason as his manager for this kind of like more militant Nation of Islam Black Panther Party version of the character of Farouk.
Yeah.
We are in the midst of the early days of that kind of
Jobbing some dudes
storyline.
out to Farouk and giving him some cred.
Jobbing some dudes out to Farouk because Crush and Farouk don't really, in the storyline of the Nation, Farouk and Crush don't really coexist with each other for very long. Because eventually you get into one of the most bizarre storylines that I've ever encountered in the WWF, which is the Nation versus the Los Boricuas
Oh yeah, I remember all of this.
versus
Disciples
the
of Apocalypse.
DOA. So this is like early days of Nation where Crush and Farouk are still associated with each other.
Yeah, so we don't need to talk about the gang wars. What I remember of Raw during
No,
the gang war time is just
and
terrible.
honestly, we should not talk about the gang wars at all. What we should really talk about is Farouk versus Bart Gunn.
I was going to say, let's talk about Bart Gunn because this is in Texas. So they bring out Bart Gunn. The Smoking Guns have disbanded, apparently. I don't remember where Billy Gunn was at this time, but Bart.
I don't think that they had necessarily broken up so much as probably Billy was nursing an injury.
Okay.
Bart and Billy, whenever they were a successful tag team, but they were successful enough where they still had an air of dominance whenever
Sure.
they were broken up because they were a dominant tag team while they were together. I
They're
mean,
two
by
huge
the time,
dudes.
yeah, two fucking jacked dudes. By the time that we're in 97, they had been a tag team for like 3.5 years in the WWF. So they had an air of dominance about them. It would be like if you broke up the British Bulldogs, if Davey Boy wrestled a solo match and then Dynamite Kid wrestled a solo match, they would still have that kind of respect. They would still be respectable in their individual ventures.
Sure. So Bart Gunn isn't really a jobber here, and he actually, this isn't a one-sided match, you know. Farouk has to cheat to win. And
No,
Bart
not at
Gunn
all.
gets his moves in. He's in Beaumont, Texas. He gets to
Yeah.
run out and beat up the rappers, which was hilarious. And
Yeah.
everyone in Texas is cheering for him. It's great. And then it's even better when Farouk wins. By the way, Texans
Which
yelling at Wolfie D is just, man, I can't believe, in hindsight, I'm surprised that we didn't see more, that crowd isn't like, what the fuck is this gimmick? You know what I mean? Like,
So going back to the throat spiking episode that we had, where this is still relatively early days of the WCW versus WWF Monday Night War. This episode of Raw is still only an hour long. So they have a relatively short amount of time to try and fit in maximum impact. And if you're really trying to get a character like Farouk over, you should put him in a competitive match against someone who actually has some credibility associated with him. And Bart Gowen is a tough dude. We knew that from in hindsight from looking at the Tough Enough competition.
Brawl for All.
Oh, Brawl for All. Sorry. Yeah, Brawl for All competition.
But this is pre-Brawl for All.
This is definitely pre-Brawl for All, but Bart Gunn had already had the, at least backstage, reputation of being a tough ass dude.
And Brawl for All was WWE, WWF had a tournament of actual shoot fighting, guys really punching each other in the face in the ring. And
Well,
they
it was.
thought a guy was going to win, and then he didn't.
They thought that it was basically set up as a tournament so that Dr. Death Steve Williams would win, but he got his ass knocked out by Bart Gunn, and Bart Gunn was proven to be the strong man. One of the funniest segments I've ever seen on an episode of Raw is whenever Bart Gunn is fighting Bradshaw,
Oh.
and Bradshaw gets his ass handed to him by Bart Gunn.
Neat.
And Bradshaw has a brief moment where he's like, obviously knocked out, but like he's like, oh man, I'm such a tough guy. I'm gonna throw a punch. And Bart Gunn just slightly jabs him and completely just wastes him.
Man.
It's
Bart Gunn.
hilarious.
But then didn't Bart Gunn like get beat up by Butterbean at WrestleMania, and then that was his career or something like that?
Well, the fucked up thing is that they paid a bunch of money to Butterbean. And they didn't want Butterbean. Basically, with the way that Bart Gunn has portrayed it is that Bart Gunn took a fall
Oh, okay. Huh.
so that he wouldn't show up Butterbean. He basically put himself out there to get knocked out so that so that everyone could get a WrestleMania payday and everyone can go home happy.
I
And
buy that.
they promised that Bart Gunn would get a push afterwards, but since Butterbean beat him, they used that as collateral to be like, you don't need to push, you just got beat on WrestleMania by a dude that we don't even employ full time.
Yeah. You know, that's a bummer because Bart Gunn was pretty cool in this match, too, I gotta say, in hindsight.
Oh, dude, I mean, he did some good shit. I mean, he's doing some like knee drop action, he's doing the big boot. Farouk is getting plenty of heat. First of all, Farouk puts himself over huge. He does a sick spine buster.
I wrote that down, yeah.
He's getting lots of like drunk dudes who hate him yelling at him. He's, doing some rope assistance. Farouk is doing some classic heel work here. He goes for a flying clothesline, he misses. Bart Gunn is like hulking up. He does a bulldog. There's like shenanigans outside with PG-13 and Crush and everything like that. He eventually hits the Dominator, which is to me the most countered move in wrestling.
You barely ever see it.
But he fucking hits it and it looks sick.
It looks sick this time. It is
It
awesome.
looks fucking sick and he hits the 1-2-3. We're done. Ron Simmons, Farouk goes over super strong in this scenario. Again, Joe,
That's the whole match.
why do you like Farouk so much? That's what I want to know. I
I
know
don't
you
have any new answer, man. I laid it out. I laid it out. Farouk is the man. Hit your knees and start praying. That's all anyone's got to say. He's just, it's like sometimes you see a thing and you're like, obviously that thing is cool. So I think I could describe why Jericho 1997 or 8 or whatever is cool. But with Farouk, it just seems like, duh. Farouk is awesome. Get with it, everybody. I was pissed that going back to try to find a Farouk match to watch, I couldn't find like a good like heavyweight title match or something. They all end in DQ. They all have fucking Ahmed Johnson in them. They all have or it's like, the whole nation versus a guy, like, and they still lose or something. Really, the nation was not booked very strongly at all. And like overall, when you're looking at results, maybe they beat guys down a lot, but it was a bummer trying to find a Farouk match that the second dot on the network didn't say ends in DQ when Savio Vega interferes. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
I just wanted to see a match where Farouk beat a guy
That
to
makes
see,
sense.
like, maybe that is what I initially watched. And to be honest, there's probably something about the promos. I don't think Farouk's remembered for his promos, but Farouk yelling at guys is right up my alley. He was probably mean to the other Nation members too. Something about that is cool. I like a domineering bad guy stable leader.
Yeah.
I like when they treat their stablemates like crap and the stablemates still follow them blindly or like
Yeah.
maybe like get grumpy about it, but I mean, they eventually turn on him, but just good stuff all around. I think I was happy with this match. The Dominator makes it worth the price of admission alone.
It's one of the few times where, like, negating all the times that Farouk would hit the Dominator against the Hardy Boys in the late 90s, early 2000s.
As the APA or Acolytes?
As the APA, that the Dominator looked fucking dominating.
Yeah.
It actually looks like an incapacitating move.
Yeah.
It looks fucking sick.
And I want to say, for quality Farouk matches, it's the APA is probably the place to go. But or even
So
some Acolytes matches. But I picked
why
this
didn't you,
match because I wanted
yeah,
to get at
why did you pick
why
this?
I liked Farouk initially with the Nation.
Got it.
And, I still think even though I dislike the majority of people in the Nation when they were in the Nation, I still think the Nation is awesome. God, it's a totally crazy gimmick too when you look back and you're just like a Black Panther, Nation of Islam, like militant, but they're very obviously portrayed as villains. Mine, there's so many things that are audacious and probably backwards and not good about that gimmick. But Farouk just he was the coolest. I rooted for Farouk pretty much constantly when he was against anyone. I don't think I've ever rooted against Farouk in a match. That said, I think we should wrap up that match and move on to match two.
Match two is Stunning Steve Austin versus Dustin Rhodes for the WCW World Television Championship at Halloween Havoc 1991. So, Joe, I know I have asked you slash made you watch this match previously. Before this podcast recording, I have asked you to watch this match because I fucking love the concept of the television championship. Obviously, it's a secondary title, but it is one of the strongest secondary titles that I remember from my childhood. There are two people that I associate this championship with. One is Arn Anderson. The other is Steve Austin. Stunning Steve Austin. This is a match where Stunning Steve Austin defends his belt against Dustin Rhodes. At the time, WCW was kind of stuck between Do we want to push younger stars, or do we want to hold on to the remnants of the late 80s NWA, which I felt like was telling across the, if you haven't seen that, if you haven't seen Halloween Havoc 1991, the main event is the WCW World Heavyweight Champion Lex Luger in a 2 out of 3 falls match against Farouk Ron
Oh,
Simmons.
cool. I have not watched that.
Oh shit, you should fucking watch it. It's actually a really good match. It's actually one of the better Lex Luger matches that you will ever see. But we're getting sidetracked from the Austin and Rhodes match, which I felt like was a really strong match between two young competitors who are trying to win over a predominantly NWA centric crowd. They're trying to prove the fact that they are young wrestlers who should be taken seriously. And they take it to a 15-minute draw. And within the match, they give the perception that each of the competitors are badasses, good wrestlers, and also deserving of the championship. I would be interested, Joe, to know what you think about this match, given the fact that I've already told you to watch it not once, but twice.
Yeah, first of all, Dustin Rhodes is the natural. He's ranked number 5 in the world. Stunning Steve, ranked number 4. Tony Schiavone told me that. This match is great, you know? It's a little confusing a couple of times because Dustin's character isn't as much of a hero as I expected him to be.
Well, it's too early and they're pushing it too hard.
No, well, he doesn't behave like it. You know, he behaves like
No,
he's
no, no.
21,
No,
first of
he
all.
doesn't.
And, you know, he counts along with, he thinks he's got it won, and he's counting the 3 count along with the ref. And then when Austin kicks, he yells, "Shit!" And he pushes the ref, and he doesn't hook the leg, which Tony Schiavone points out. That part is a little confusing, but there's a lot of great stuff here, and there's a lot of little things that these guys do so well, and even at Dustin's age. Austin, I mean, with the hair, it's always a toughie, but when he has the perfect wrestling punch. It's clearly not a real punch, but it is with such force and gets so close to being a real punch that I
Oh, dude.
buy it. It's the best. And then
It's sold like a real punch, too.
Dustin is great at selling and flying out of the ring. That time he bounces out of the ring is crazy. You know, they're big dudes, but they seem small compared to the Lugers of the world. But they're flying around this ring, you know. They're moving super fast. The amount of stuff they cram into 15 minutes is wild.
One thing that kind of became apparent to me in this match is that even though it is obviously a worked match, they add a certain air of realism to the match. Like how there are certain hard way, bust open portions of the match where someone gets color. It seems like it's these dudes have beat the shit out of each other and some dude's going to start bleeding. It's not like, not to be perpetual callback or anything like that. It's like as a comparison to the TNA steel cage match that we watch where we have 5 minutes of action and then some dude's just like gushing blood. Well, the blood doesn't actually start to happen until about 10 minutes into the match where it's like if these dudes are actually having a competitive, realistic, we're hitting each other with hard moves as well. It's competitive. Some dude might get busted open. It seems it there's, like I said, there's an air of realism within the match, within the worked elements of the match that make it realistic.
Hey, there's an element of fakeness outside the match called Lady Blossom. Sorry, that's the bad joke.
Which Jim Ross says, I don't know where she'd hide a foreign object tonight.
Yeah. JR takes time out of this match to bury the whole concept of managers, which is a bummer for me. But I want to talk about the commentary in this match.
Sure, go ahead.
Because I've already twice put over Tony Schiavone, but good old Jim Ross, he tells the story of whenever they do a counter and it's very fast and it's hard to tell exactly what happened, he narrates that. He doesn't have to narrate every broad stroke, right? But
Sure.
Austin will do dastardly things like pull hair slightly, or eye poke, or grab the trunks, but it's either lightning quick or it's behind the camera angle. And JR will call that in
Yeah.
a way that I am watching the match, and if I muted it, I would just be like, oh, like I couldn't tell that Austin was that dastardly and that much of a bad guy. But JR
Yeah.
helps me see, you know, who to invest in this match. It's great. How slicky is it doing that?
JR is a fantastic play-by-play dude. The thing is that the JR Shivani like tag team on the face of it should be great because they're both two commentators who should be putting over the storyline 100% and making it so that everything is maximum.
They need a Heenan.
But I feel they needed a counter.
They need a
They
color.
needed a fu they needed some color to that, which is funny because I just watched a WWF Wrestling Challenge where Jim Ross and Bobby Heenan were the commentary team.
Wow.
And it worked, but Heenan was obviously out the door and he wasn't giving it
He didn't
100%.
care that much, yeah.
He didn't really give a shit. Ross didn't find his foil until Lawler.
Yeah.
And that's when it really fucking clicked. And that's like, it goes back to, I mean, the original pay-per-views whenever I would watch, WrestleMania 4 or 5, and it's Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura.
Oh yeah,
Those are,
classic.
that's a fucking classic commentary team.
Okay, any last point on this match?
The interesting thing to me for this match was that between Steve Austin and Dustin Rhodes, you had two individuals who were minor players in a secondary federation who ended up being major stars in what was the dominant federation for the late 90s and the early 2000s. To me, it was like, oh, what a difference that 6 years makes in
Yeah.
the life of these two individuals. Being able to truly own their characters and become the kind of performers that they wanted to be.
Yeah, 'cause I mean Stunning Steve is like a halfway to Triple H with Billy Gunn Trunks, and the natural Dustin Rhodes is not even barely, it's just Dusty's son, you know what I mean?
Oh,
But they're
yeah.
great, and they both go on to become absolute greats, you know? It's never. I guess I'm curious what this match would be like to watch back then if you had no idea that these two people were going to go on to what they went on to be. That would be fascinating. I also want to say I love the 15-minute time limit.
Do you really?
Yeah. In fact, I think that's a decent segue into the next match, too, which also has a 15-minute time limit. The random match generators pick. Gold Dust versus the Ultimate Warrior in a King of the Ring tournament qualifying match from Raw 161, May 27th, 1996. This match
Good Lord.
is so many things. It's
There's a lot in this match.
so I'm glad that the random match generator picked this match. Not you're giving me the finger, but here's why. Here's why. I said last time that, or a couple, I don't know, I said in one of these previous podcasts that I think the Attitude Era really begins with Stone Cold winning the King of the Ring tournament. So this is like a month before that, right?
This is the King of the Ring that Austin wins.
And you see this arena. It's bizarrely bright white, the lighting, right?
True.
Raw opens immediately on Gold Dust in the ring, caressing
Like
himself.
awkwardly with him
Yes. So
out of nowhere caressing himself.
The we are like, what I'm trying to say is the production quality and the way that they tape and light and do everything for Raw would change drastically within the next 6 to 12 months, right?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely.
But
This is still like they're treating Raw like a house show.
yes, exactly. But also we have okay, so also we have the Ultimate Warrior here, who is a remnant from the bygone days of, 1989 or whenever WWF was riding as high as they had ridden to that point, right?
True.
On the other side of that, like I said, this is the beginning of the King of the Ring tournament that would see Austin win and drop the Austin 316, says, "I just kicked your ass," right?
True.
And we have one Dustin Rhodes as Gold Dust, who has been around for a while in WWF at this point, I believe. But
Yeah.
Gold Dust to me is an integral part of the Attitude Era and the transition to the Attitude Era. Because Gold
Oh.
Dust is not just your standard gay panic or fancy boy gimmick. They had those forever. Gold Dust is something more. Gold Dust, even when he first came out in WWE, which, when was that? A year before this or something? When did he fight Piper at
That
Mania?
was well, well.
Who knows?
That was he. No, he came in 95. He got let go from WCW as Dustin Rhodes because of the Blacktop Bully King of the Road match that he had at Slamboree 94, which was too much blood. They bladed whenever Turner was like, "We don't need blood on
Yeah.
television on any of our programs, whether it be pay-per-view or not." And they made the on the cuff decision that, yeah, we need blood in this match. And he gets to let go. And I agree that Goldust was integral in the like furthering of the product and the WWF product into the Attitude Era, because sexuality was something that was not really discussed or even brought up in storylines at all.
Yeah.
You add someone with a homosexual connotation to them, plus Austin, who was extremely aggressive in the opposite realm of extremely masculine. You have the makings of, you have the
Wait, did you mean to
ingredients.
say Ultimate Warrior, not Austin? Oh, you're talking about. Yeah.
I'm talking about the two extremes. I'm talking about how you have Goldust, who is kind of like the extreme campy 90s version heel. Okay, you have Austin, who is an extremely masculine supposed heel who ends up being a face.
Gold Dust isn't just, I'm glad you said sexuality, because he's not just a sort of gay panic character, because he comes out with Marlena and he's very central and sexual towards women. Gold Dust
Exactly.
embodies kind of this whole, like, all of sexuality in a really interesting way for this. He's way ahead of his time with this gimmick.
Oh,
And
completely.
it's a gimmick that, to some extent, is still going on today. I mean, Goldust is a character. He is wrestling in WWE. He's still doing some of the same moves. He's not as outwardly, sexual in his mannerisms, but he's there. He does the caress his body and breathe in thing, and the crowd cheers, right? But the
Well, the
crowds
well,
in 1996 are like, what the fuck?
yeah. I mean, the thing
And it's
is that
great.
I added the connotation of sexual to Goldust previously, but he's hypersexual and not
Yeah.
leaning towards one sexuality or another.
Yeah.
It
He
is
embraces all of it, baby.
all-encompassing sexuality, which is something that hadn't really been discussed in the realm of pro wrestling, which is already has weird connotations of sexuality associated with
Yeah.
it to begin with.
And entertainment, and the other element of Goldust's character is movies. You know, he's Shattered Dream Productions. He's all about
Exactly.
movies. Marlena is sort of his director. She sits in a director's chair, and he's all about the history of, you know, portraying characters and entertaining people. So he's kind of like, I guess, the most meta wrestling gimmick ever,
And
combining
actually,
heightened sexuality and violence and entertainment into one
character.
gold-suited weirdo.
Yeah.
He's so
And
good.
actually, I know that you and I have both had the kind of understanding that Austin was the beginning of the Attitude Era. Should we change that logic to actually be that
Well,
Goldust as a character is actually the kind of like he's the genesis of the Attitude Era.
Goldust is one of the forebears. I feel like the moment of Austin 316 says, "I just kicked your ass," is like, you know, the shot heard round the merch table. You know what I mean? Like that is to me the defining moment of the second half of the 90s for WWE and what is their biggest era. That said, I think Goldust is right up there in candidates for greatest of all time. We saw it in the Dustin match earlier. This is the thing. We'll table this discussion for maybe another time. I think Goldust.
Let's not table it. Let's go for it. So
Goldust could.
we have Dustin, we have King of the Ring qualifying tournament Gold Dust. We have the cognitive realization of Gold Dust as a post TNA Black Reign coming back to the WWE
He comes
wrestler
back. He teams with Cody.
with fucking coding, and he's the fucking best.
He kills it. Now he's in Golden Truth, a comedy team with R-Truth, but he has wrestled consistently since before he was 21, because this wasn't his debut or anything in the last match.
Oh, hell no.
So he's wrestled consistently for, you know, probably 30 years or something, and he's always been great. I mean, maybe sometimes he's been not great, but I didn't watch his TNA stuff, but at
He
least he
is
was doing
coming.
stuff.
He's coming up on 30 years. He's 2 years removed from 30 years.
Okay.
There have been brief moments of shit throughout his career, but we also have to.
Everyone has those.
Everyone has that. Even like fucking like the first 10 years of Ric Flair's career, he was ripping off superstar Billy Graham.
There you
So it's
go.
like, you know, you have those additional 25, 28 some odd years where you're like, oh shit, Ric Flair is Ric Flair. You can't be gold the entire time. It's like it goes back to any kind of artist. If your flame burns too bright, you're going to burn out too quickly. Your ability to create is going to be limited because your time is going to be extremely limited. So if Goldust was like fucking like dialing in 100% all the fucking time, he may have only existed for 4 years or something like that. If Dustin
Yeah.
Rhodes had been like maximum the entire time, he may have only had a career that was 10 years long or something like that.
Yeah.
But we have been fortunate unknowingly to see a performer who has had a nearly 30-year career who is actually great, who has gone
He's
through the
great.
struggle, who has gone through the struggles of what a professional wrestler has to go through: substance abuse, pushing too soon, figuring out what the fuck do you do with your career, like basically, essentially a midlife crisis
Yeah.
in your career, which is Goldust is an extension of that, you
Yeah.
know. If because by the time that he had gone into the WWF, by the time we were watching this Ultimate Warrior match, he had been a wrestler for 7 years. All right, so 5 years of that was under the guise of you are Dusty's son, and he had technically already had a run in WWF by then as Dusty's son in 1990 and 1991. So if you're under the thumb of your father, what do you do as an extreme resistance against that legacy?
Yeah.
We have the Gold Dust character.
You have to recreate yourself as something totally new, but also kind of also connecting with Dusty. I mean,
Well,
dust is in there.
technically you don't. Well, the thing is that you want to rip it up and start again, but you don't want to burn that bridge 100%. You
Yeah.
want to burn that bridge like 90%, because you still want to have the association, but you don't want to have the association 100%. Like, you don't want to be like, oh, there was a wrestler around the same time, Scott Putski, who was the Polish power Ivan Putski's son. He had basically ripped off his father's gimmick 100%, and he went fucking nowhere because that was not
Yeah.
relatable to a modern wrestling fan.
Yeah.
It was too tied to the old guard. Goldust is the perfect tipping point between old guard and new guard. Goldust is a character that is ahead of its time. Like, it truly is.
Vince says he is unquestionably the most controversial wrestler in the history of the World Wrestling Federation.
I would actually agree with that. Like, outside of the wrestling world controversy, within the kayfabe terminology, Goldust is, that's true. That's actually true.
Yeah.
Like, he is,
Some good commentary.
Vince got it right.
It's the only good thing Vince says this entire. No, I'm kidding. But
All right, so
do we
I
even
feel
want to
like
talk about the match? I think we just went 20 on Gold Dust.
oh
Do
shit,
you want to
man.
just call it a podcast
No,
and
no, no, no. Let's not call it a podcast. We are three out of three falls. We have to go from bell to bell. So let's talk about the match briefly.
so at the beginning I thought Warrior looked leathery and slow and old and weird.
My comment was that Warrior hits the ring. He's so blonde. I hated Warrior at this time. He looked like he was just collecting a paycheck.
Yeah, but this match goes to a double count out right around when it probably would have ended from the time limit. It has a
Yeah.
15-minute time limit too.
It would have
And
truly ended.
they go and they go and they go, and Warrior keeps doing power moves. It's not like he's huffing and puffing. He holds it together. I was at the start of this match, I was like, this is pathetic. And by the end, he had kind of won me over. He does a good belly to belly, he does cool power moves. And
But
Gold Dust really runs the match. He
yeah. Yeah,
does so he's
exactly.
awesome. What and
Well,
he's
the thing.
game for everything. Getting thrown into the crowd, getting, like running out, doing the hide and seek around the thing, quitting and getting carried back by Ahmed Johnson, taking all these moves. Man, he's just fantastic in this match.
The thing that really became apparent to me was that whenever I saw the lineup of 1996 Ultimate Warrior versus Goldust, I was like, oh shit, this is going to be the drizzling shits. What I really took notice of more than anything was that how great of a worker Goldust is, because he played into the Warrior's strengths.
Oh yeah,
It's
absolutely.
all power moves. Goldust is taking big bumps. He's playing up to the crowd. That just shows me how strong of a heel worker Goldust is, and Dustin, how strong of a worker he is. Warrior is kind of no-selling the whole time. Goldust
But in a
does
way
get.
that it looks like he's supposed to.
Well, yeah.
Like,
The thing
Goldust
is.
isn't like, oh no, why aren't you selling my shit? Like,
No. And also, but it's in tandem with the fact that Vince is like putting his shit over huge. Like, not only is he calling out the, strength and prowess of the Warrior, he's also shilling his comic
this
book the whole
bad
time.
comic book, yeah.
So it's like, how do you expect this match to end? Like, if the commentary is putting over the good guy so strong, how do you expect Goldust, who at that time is the Intercontinental Champion, to like come out?
Wait,
Like,
he's the IC champion right now?
he's the IC champion at that time.
What?
Like, what do you expect to happen? Do you expect him to like lose clean, Probably not, because he's the IC champion. Do you expect a schmoz finish? Yeah, you actually do, but like, what does that look like? Does that mean that Warrior continues in the tourney
Yeah.
through a count out, or what the fuck do you
Yeah.
expect?
I mean, the double count out, in hindsight, is the only way to do it. But when I was watching it, I mean, I expected, just as a casual fan perspective,
Yeah.
Warrior would win.
All right. So I have a question for you, Joe. In your history of watching wrestling, did you ever like The Ultimate Warrior?
Sure, when I was 7, Ultimate Warrior was the shit.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. I was always a guy who liked underdogs and kind of weird cast-off secondary characters. So, like we've talked about before, I was a Red Rooster fan, right? So
Sure.
I would be like cheering the Red Rooster, and my brother, who's 2 years older than me, would be like, "Why are you cheering that guy? Who cares?" And then the main event would come on with Hogan or Warrior or Savage or something,
Sure.
and my brother would be going apeshit, but so would I. Like, I had the capacity to go apeshit for those guys the same, and the weirdos. I didn't just care about the Warriors of the place, but no 6-year-old boy is gonna not think the Ultimate Warrior is the bee's knees, you know what I mean? Especially at the height of whatever you call his version of Hulkamania, you know?
Sure. I mean, that ties in with the maximum marketing capability of the WWF at the time. Like, that makes sense 100%. Like, I loved Warrior until he got into a feud with Jake the Snake Roberts, because I love Jake.
Yeah.
But Jake was obviously the heel,
Yeah, he's the bad guy. That was a great feud.
but since I was such a huge Jake the Snake
Wait.
fan, I didn't give a shit if he was a heel or a face. I was 100% Jake the Snake. Same thing whenever he came to WCW and he was feuding with Sting. I was like, I like Sting, but no, fuck Sting. I want Jake the Snake to win.
Yeah. Like me and Farouk.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, 96 Warrior, really, I wasn't paying that much attention to Warrior at the time, you know?
Also, it's weird to think about the connotation of what was going on in WWF and WCW at that time. Because at this time,
You got Hall and Nash.
Hall and Nash were both in WCW and leading towards the NWO.
Yeah.
And what was WWF's reaction to that? Let's bring back the Warrior.
Well, I'm pretty sure the Warrior is only back at this point to sell his comic book. That's my guess after watching this match.
Well,
But the fact that
actually,
he did that
no,
this
go
match
ahead.
was as good as it was blows my mind, because I turned this match on and I was expecting, as you know, same as you just said a minute ago, total crap. Total
Yeah.
crap. And by
Yeah.
the end of this match, I was like, I have more notes. I have a whole lot of notes. And they actually are positive. Now, is that just because I was in a good mood because I watched a Farouk match before? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, it was the worst part of this match is when fucking Ahmed Johnson comes out. That guy's the worst.
Well, I think I agree, because Ahmed Johnson is the shits. Just based on, I think that the main takeaway from this episode of the podcast, listeners, is that Ahmed Johnson sucks.
Yeah, he's not. He's the. I
Because
mean, he's a big dude.
he's a big jack dude, but he's also associated with two of the three falls in this podcast. Of
Ugh, he's
the
just not good. So this, Jason, I don't know. Were you okay with this match, watching it all the way through? Like I said, I thought it was gonna be crap, and I found it to be both fascinating and really not as bad. I really wanted to, talk a bunch of shit about the Warrior. I think that's what, like, a minute into this match, I was like, man, the Warrior blows. I'm gonna talk a bunch of shit about the Warrior. And by the end of it, I was like, no, that electric chair was cool. The belly to belly was cool. He did a bunch of cool power moves. He didn't look like he was running out of gas. He was game the whole time. Just as Goldust from the beginning, one of my first notes is, man, Goldust is game. That guy will do anything. And then you look at Warrior and it's like, I guess Warrior was too. Anyway.
I think that I too went into this match begrudgingly. Whenever it came up on the random match generator, I was like, random match generator, you're taking me for a ride. This is
That's what
not
it
going to be
does.
great. I was like, this is not going to be cool. But the thing that stood out to me more than anything was that Goldust is a fantastic worker. He's really great, and he played into what he was given. Warrior is obviously going to be about big moves, big power moves, and Goldust reacted to those in the best way possible. He made the match so that it had movement. You know, the problem that I had overall with the match is it seemed like a house show match. Like, it wasn't like a TV match. Like, it didn't it in the realm of where this match falls within the Monday Night War, this isn't the kind of match that would make me want to flip back and forth between the two channels, USA and TNT. But Goldust is such a strong worker that, removed from the Monday Night War, I realized how strong this match actually was. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, so I was not thinking of the context of what was going on. I mean, what was going on in the Monday Night War was they were losing. But
Yeah.
this match, the story that.
But I also think about the Warrior as a ploy to try and win.
Yeah, they probably thought the Warrior would keep eyes on this. And in that sense, I don't think it's that bad because I think it tells this kind of like really epic story of Goldust outsmarting him, trying to leave, getting brought back, you know, like angering him, really lasting through Warrior's beatdown and using guile and craftiness and trickery to stay in the game. The story told in this match is really, really cool, I thought. A big surprise. Except Ahmed basically saves the match for Goldust. I mean, Ahmed
Well,
is the reason.
he
The reason Ultimate Warrior is not in the King of the Ring tournament after this match is because of Ahmed Johnson. So
Yeah,
Ahmed should have fought the Warrior. I think Ahmed goes on to fight Goldust, if I remember correctly. Probably should have gone on to retire, but what can we say? This match, like every other match we've ever watched, gets a thumbs up from Joe.
so this match gets a 3/4 thumbs up from Jason. It
Okay.
was it was I it just reiterated the fact that Dustin Rhodes is really talented.
A limp thumbs up from Jason.
No, not limp so much as halfway. A 90-degree angle thumbs up. Not a
Like a thumb sideways?
thumb sideways.
Like
Yeah, sideways.
you're waiting for the crowd to decide whether the gladiator lives or dies?
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is as good as you can get for me on this match. The thing is that Dustin Rhodes is really fucking talented, and that is, I feel like that's the overarching like
Yeah.
dynamic in the podcast, is that, but considering that he's in 2 out of 3 matches, 2 out of 3 falls,
Yeah.
if you will, he's really great.
I
We
hope he's
saw,
rich.
I fucking hope he is too.
Man, the Goldust character. I hope we get a documentary on just Goldust. Like a whole behind the scenes.
I am threatening to maybe do a Black Rain match.
Holy sh. Hey, pick it, man.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
We'll see you next time.
Okay.